I want to start with talking about one of the most important sort of guiding principles of learning halakha that I've really imbibed at Hadar in the last 4 years, which is that every time halakha and a new question, a new circumstance encounter each other, two things need to happen. One of those things is that that new question has to have illuminated halakha and Torah for us. We have to understand the Torah better because we came to it with that new question. And halakha has to have illuminated our question, our world, our circumstances for us. Because we turn to Torah and halakha to try to understand something, we actually have deeper, richer, more sophisticated ways of thinking about our life and the circumstances that brought us to have that question. And so whenever we are approaching any sort of halakha question in our learning, I'm always looking for those two things, is what does this question teach me about the Torah? And what can Torah really teach me about this question? So I want to go through sort of a halakhic case tonight it's more than just a case study. It's a topic that's very near to my heart, but I think it's also a great example of what it looks like to really try to ask those questions of, right, how can this question teach us more about the Torah? How can this Torah teach us more about the circumstances that brought this question? So this is a question that came up for me while I was working on a project called the Trans Halakha Project that's been working over the last 2 years to be producing halakhic resources of all sorts by and for trans people. And the question here is it possible to immerse in a mikveh while wearing a chest binder? So a chest binder is a garment that will often be worn by trans men or sometimes non-binary people to give the chest a flat appearance. And this is a really important part of how a lot of people manage their dysphoria, their sense of discomfort in their own body. And so I think that this is a really important question to ask, because basically the question is, can someone actually feel at home in their own skin when they're in the mikveh? Or do they have to be going in the mikveh in a way that is removing everything from their body as would be sort of typically accepted, but in this case, in a way that actually makes them feel profoundly alienated from their body? So I want to start with just some core principles of what are you allowed to wear into the mikveh, what are you not allowed to wear in the mikveh, so we can understand the foundational material on this before we dive into the specifics of this question. So on your source sheet here, in the first source, in Nida 67b, we have a statement by Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yitzchak says there are basically two questions you have to ask when you're asking if something is a chitzitza. So a chitzitza is basically a thing you can't wear in the mikveh. It's something that is interposing between your body and the water that prevents a sort of total contact between the body and the water and would invalidate the immersion. So Rabbi Yitzchak is going to say there's two sort of core questions you have to ask about something to determine if it is a chitzitza or not. So the first question is, how much of your body does it cover? If it covers a majority of your body, that would be problematic. The second question is, are you makpid on it? And this is a word that's a little hard to translate, and a lot of what we're doing later in this year is going to be trying to understand what we mean by makpid. So I'm going to give you a very rough translation now for that to be kind of a placeholder for you to then complicate that later. But I'll say for now, being makpid on something is that you mind that it's there. You want to take it off. There's something about it there that is bothering you that you want to remove. So what Rabbi Yitzchak says is, if it covers the majority of your body and you are makpid, you've got both of those factors, then it's a chitzitza on a Doraita level, on a Torah level. If you have only one of those, so it's a minority of your body, but you are makpid, or it's a majority of your body, but you're not makpid, then it's a chitzitza on a Durabanan level, on a rabbinic level. So still a problem, but on a lesser intense way. And then the only case for something that's on your body in the mikveh is not a chitzitza, is if it's both a minority of your body and you're not makpid. So when you're asking any question about, can I wear X in the mikveh, those are the two questions you're going to ask, is how much does it cover and how does this person relate to it? A couple other important notes about what we mean by makpid. So the Balei HaNefesh here, which is by the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, is explaining what, when we say makpid, right, you mind having this on your body, what we don't mean is that you mind having it on your body at the moment you are about to go into the mikveh. What we mean is there are clear, somewhat regular moments in your life when you want to take this thing off. So even if at the moment you're about to go in the mikveh, you're perfectly happy to have it there. Nonetheless, if there are other moments in your life where you take it off, that would be considered makpid, and therefore would be problematic. So the question we're asking about, is this person makpid, is, are there times, any time in their life, when they on a somewhat regular basis want to take this thing off? So based off of what I just laid out, it seems very obvious that a chest binder is a chitzitza, right? It doesn't cover a majority of the body, at least not typically. But if you wear a binder, you have to take it off every day. You will injure yourself if you don't. So people who wear binders, ideally, are taking them off every single day. So under those definitions, it seems pretty clear that this is a minority of your body, but you are makpid. So it would be a chitzitza on a durabanan level. And just from this sort of like surface level engagement with the material, that seems like the very obvious conclusion. So basically, the rest of this year, I want to try to present an argument that that is not the correct way to think about this. But I want to sort of be upfront that like the default answer here is like obviously it's a chitzitza. And there's like a pretty strong argument in that direction that that is what the answer is. So I want to get into a little bit of how I approached answering this question before I get into the actual answer. So when I told people I was going to be writing on this topic, most people said, oh, you're going to compare it to a medical device, like the medicine patches you were raising. That's going to be how you're going to think about this, because there's a lot of material written on various medical devices that people can't take off their bodies or be dangerous to take off their bodies, and thinking about what it looks like to be able to go into the mikveh with those on. And everyone assumed, for the most part, that was the way I was going to go, is going to try to make an argument that a binder is somehow like a medical device, right? That it's performing an important psychological function for the person who's wearing it, and therefore it needs to stay on in the same way a medical device does, and maybe then there's some leniencies we can get to around that. So I want to explain why I didn't take that approach, because I think there's some important values in how I approach halakha that are there in why I chose not to take that approach. So for one thing, any approach that analogizes this to a medical device is an approach that sets up sort of trans people and the way that we relate to our bodies is fundamentally bidyeved, a sort of after-the-fact, non-ideal situation that we wish was different, but we're in this bad situation, now let's deal with the facts now that we're here. I don't think that trans people existing and being who we are and having our bodies is bidyeved, right? I think that trans people are the way that we are lechatchila, ideally. That's how we're supposed to be. And therefore, I think we need to find halakhic language to talk about what it means to be a trans person in a trans body that is not bidyeved language. One more thing is also, my intuition was that's actually not the right category to think about this here, is that the reason why it feels to me like, well, maybe you should be able to go into the mikveh with a binder on, is not because I really think it would be dangerous for people not to. It's because I think there's something going on there about what we mean by makpid that is not being adequately captured by thinking about a binder this way. And so going back to my point at the beginning about the need for Torah and for halakha and the world to be sort of mutually illuminating when they encounter each other, if we pick the wrong category to approach a question in an attempt to kind of get a loophole, a leniency, a workaround, then we're losing the possibility of Torah and halakha being mutually illuminating, of halakha and the world being mutually illuminating of each other. We're just, oops, okay, I got around that halakha, I don't have to worry about it anymore, but I haven't learned anything about my world through asking a halakha question that way. And that question has not taught me anything about the underlying halakha because all I did was get around it. So what I want to do is actually try to use this question both to try to understand what do we mean by makpid better, to get to a finer grained, more nuanced understanding of what we mean by that, and to try to find language in the Torah of chitzitza to talk about what it feels like to be someone who wears a binder, what's actually like language from our canon and tradition that talks about what that feels like. So what we're going to be doing is not trying to get some sort of loophole leniency around, oh, it might be dangerous to take it off. What we're going to try to do is actually try to understand what we mean by makpid in a more nuanced way and see where that gets us. The first question is, when we talk about hakpada meaning the noun form of makpid, that's the fact of feeling makpid about something. When we talk about hakpada, whose hakpada are we talking about? So you raised the question earlier, which is we're talking about a general person, this particular individual. So the Torah Bait here, which is a book on halakhot by the Rashba in the Middle Ages, he says here that what we mean by hakpada is how we assume that a generic person might feel about this. So not just you as an individual with all of your idiosyncrasies and weirdnesses, but a general person. How do people usually relate to this kind of thing? And so he says this, right? Even if, say you're a weirdo who sleeps in your glasses, showers in your glasses. You never take them off. Most people don't do that. So even though you're not makpid on those glasses, they're still a chatzitza because you're weird, right? So what we're trying to do here when we think about hakpada is how do we imagine typical people feel about this? So this immediately sets up a little bit of a problem, which is even if I say that trans men and people who wear binders relate to it in a particular way, most people would not relate to a binder on their chest in that way. Most people certainly would be makpid on a binder. So this is a potentially problem for thinking about this, which is if we're trying to think about how everyone feels, then we might end up in a bit of a dead end. But fortunately, that's not what we do. So if you look at the Gemara in Zevachim here, I'm going to read this one inside. So here we're talking about a case where someone is immersing their clothes in a mikvah in a time when purity applied not just to human bodies, but to all sorts of objects in order to wear them on the Temple Mount, in order to eat foods. You have to eat in a state of purity. You have to immerse your clothes as well as other things. So we're talking about immersing clothing here, but these same principles also apply to things that are on human bodies as well as on clothes. And so say blood on your clothes is chutzetz. If you have a big blood stain, that's a chutzitza. But if he is a butcher, meaning the owner of this garment is a butcher, it is not chutzetz. Similarly, grease on his clothes is chutzetz. And if he is a grease seller, it is not chutzetz. So what we see here is that we are carving out subcategories of people based off of professions. We're saying most people mind having blood splatters on their clothing. But butchers, that's just what life is to them. That's every day. That's all their clothes. They're never getting away from it. They have a different way of relating to this on their bodies, and therefore we don't consider them to be makpid. And then this principle gets expanded to other categories as well. So the Rashba in the Middle Ages says that for most people, having dye smeared on their hands is chotzitz, but for women who work as professional dyers, it's not. Right, so there we see it playing out on someone's body directly as well. Yeah.
Is this still an issue of bidya? Because it seems like the implication is that the ideal would be that they don't, but because of their profession, it's okay. What do you think?
I think we're just saying that butchers are different. That's just a fact. Like, it's not, we wish you weren't a butcher. Like, we want there to be butchers in the world. It's an important profession. It's got to exist. And certain Jewish communities was a very honored profession for people to have. So it's not some sort of, bidyavid, we wish it wasn't this way thing. It's just some people are butchers, some people are not. Butchers, as a group, are going to feel differently about this. And so what I would like to propose based off of this is that actually trans men should be considered their own group when assessing hakpada. At least it relates to things that are related to how they exist specifically as trans men. And that this is a sort of distinct, clearly defined group of people who has a particular way who feels differently about these things for a particular reason that's fairly clear. And that sort of, like a butcher, might be able to be something that creates its own halakhic norms around that. So the Vadei HaShulchan here lays out some principles for how you can do this, because potentially if you over-applied this approach, you could sort of slice humanity down into such tiny little subgroupings of people that you basically just get back to all that matters is your individual idiosyncrasies, right? So what are the actual limits or principles about how strongly you could apply this? So here's what he says, right? Because most people are makpid on it, it is chotzeitz even though she is not. So he was talking about some case where this particular woman is not makpid, but most people would be, and he's saying it's still a chotzitz. This applies when her perspective is different from other people in this manner, right? So the fact that we sort of override her not being makpid and say, nope, this is still a chotzitza, that's because she has some weird idiosyncrasy. But if she has a particular reason that she is not makpid, like if she is a dyer and her hands are covered in dye, this is not a chotzitza, even though a majority of people are makpid on it. Because all of them would also not be makpid on it if they were a member of this profession. So I think there's a couple of things here, right? He's saying it's a clear, defined group of people. It's a profession. We know who belongs to this group of people. It's not just sort of tiny, fine-grained distinctions, but it's a member of a particular class that we can identify. And everyone knows why they feel that way. It's not some unexpected, unusual thing. If you look at that group of people, people would kind of intuitively guess that maybe you feel differently about this than most people do. And people say, right, if I was a member of that group, I'd probably feel that way also. Right? So it's not some sort of foreign thing that other people couldn't comprehend whatsoever. It's actually how everyone feels, just situationally, right? It's like everyone would feel that way if they were in that situation that that person is. So it's actually kind of a universal that's just only being manifested in this particular subset of individuals. All right, so now I want to turn to some material on some of the precedents I looked to try to find language for, I'll say, like, some of this is a little personal, of like how it felt like for me to be someone who wore a binder every day. And I think talking to other trans people who've read and engaged with this material, I don't think this is just me. I think this is matches how a lot of people have felt about it. But trying to find places where that language actually feels like it's there in some sources talking about other cases that are not chatzitzes. So the first one we're going to look at is this tshuva, the Mibet Meir. He is, I believe, Belarusian 19th century rabbi. And here he's talking about a case where someone has a wooden tooth. So he says, any chatzitza that we assess regarding hakpada, this is only for something that is placed on the body for no purpose. And I don't think here he means no purpose. Well, I think that is an unfortunate phrasing that he has used here, because if we read on, we'll see, I don't think that's really what he means. But placed on the body, we'll say, for no purpose for now. But something that a person affixes on their body to use it like one of the limbs of their body, hakpada is not relevant, because it is considered like part of their body, because he uses it like part of his body. So what he's saying here is, right, if it's something that is experienced and sort of used as just, this is an integrated part of my body, this is not some external thing that I have stuck onto it, this hakpada is not the right question to even ask about something where that's how you feel about it. This is the case, an artificial tooth, even if it is not made for beauty, but rather because one of her teeth fell out and she made this artificial tooth in its place and eats and chews with it like the original tooth, it is like the natural original tooth. The thing here is basically, once something becomes sort of an integrated part of your body's mental map of itself, right? Of how you understand, like, this isn't something external to me. Even something external to me that's, like, useful and helpful and I like. It's like, it's not even that. It's just part of me. This is totally, actually, sort of is my body in a way that something, that other things, even things you like on your body, are not experienced as being actually part of it. What he's saying here is, if that's how you're relating to something, it just, all of the questions on hakpada disappear. It's just not the right question to ask. And he doesn't say it right here, but elsewhere in the tshuva, he says, and this woman who he's talking about takes a tooth out of her mouth on a regular basis to clean it. It's not the case that it's always there forever. She takes it out regularly, and nonetheless, when it is in her mouth, it's just a tooth. It just, when we don't say, like, your teeth are a chatzitza on the gums underneath them, right? It just, that's how your mouth is. When she has this tooth in her mouth, that's how her mouth is. It's not a chatzitza. And I'll say, for me, that felt very resonant of the way that, right, when wearing a binder, it was like, this is actually feels like my real body. I can, like, understand and map myself. And in some ways, like, this feels like the real surface of my chest, right, not what's underneath it. And so this, to me, felt like a sort of powerful language for that sense of, like, how your body, how your brain mentally maps your body is relevant for what we're even asking these sorts of questions about. The next case comes from the Karen Le David. I think he's a Romanian, also 19th century. He's talking about nail polish. And there's a lot to be said about nail polish, so I'm not going to get into all the nail polish questions here. But the Karen Le David comes up with this, I think, really nice language that John previewed for us earlier, which is, right, it says, on the contrary, she is makpid to keep it on, right? That the hakpada actually sort of flows in the other direction. It's not that I am trying to take this thing off. It's that actually, like, all of my concern, all of my, like, mindfulness around this thing is going towards putting it back on. And, like, wearing nail polish every day requires sometimes removing your nail polish, right? No one just, like, applies more layers over and over and over again without ever taking off the earlier layers, right? You have to take it off. But the direction of concern is always towards having nail polish on. And here in this tshuva, he's clearly talking about a woman who always wears nail polish. She never goes around without it. It's always part of it. It's not like a special occasion look for her. It's just how she presents herself. So her hakpada is all towards keeping it on and not towards taking it off. So here we have a language for, like, even if it's something you do take off, if the way that you're relating to that thing is actually that you always kind of want it back on, and taking it off is actually not sort of a case of, like, I want it off. It's a case of, like, part of wearing this all the time is taking it off some of the time, but actually my concern is in the direction of keeping it on. So that, I think, flows really nicely into the next source, the Sholem Yeshiv. This is Rabbi Yosef Shmuel Nathanson. I believe, in Poland, where here he's talking about a case of a woman who has a glass eye. And she has to take this glass eye out to clean it on a, it's not clear exactly how often, but a somewhat regular basis. And so he's going to make some arguments that are familiar from the first two sources, and then I think a sort of original one at the end. So I'm going to read through the whole thing. It seems, in my humble opinion, that this is not relevant here, because chatzitza is only relevant when she is makpid to remove it because it is negative and unpleasant to her. But here, when she made it for beauty, and in truth, the entire purpose of a glass eye is so that she will appear like somebody with an eye. And if this is so, on the contrary, she is not makpid on this, and it is fine even if she sometimes removes it, because this is so it will not become damaged, and it is like resting in order to adjust. Right, so here what he's saying is, right, when you're makpid on something, that is when you, there are times when you want it off. What he's saying here is, this woman never wants the glass eye out. She takes it off for a particular reason, and here he makes a metaphor to some of the laws of carrying on Shabbat. So I'm going to have to briefly explain that to understand what the metaphor he's making here. So it's prohibited to transfer objects on Shabbat from one domain to another. If I pick up an object in one domain, so inside my house, say, and I walk out into the public square, and I stop and I stand still holding that object, I'm considered to have transferred it from one domain to another and violated Shabbat. But we care, why did I stop and stand still? So if I stopped and stand still and stopped and stood still because I'm like, this is the spot I want to be in, I'd like to stop and take a rest here, then I'm considered to have put it down in the new domain and violated Shabbat. But if I'm stopping there because I need to adjust my backpack in order to keep on going, but I don't actually want to stop here, I'm stopping here sort of in the name of continuing on, but continuing on requires a stop here for the moment, then I'm not considered to have placed the object into new domain and I have not yet violated Shabbat. So what he's saying here is, this woman taking off her glass eye is like stopping in order to adjust her bags. Right, she's not taking it off because she wants it off. She's not stopping and standing in this place because this is the place she wants to be in. Right, she's stopping and standing in this place because in order to keep on going, I've got to stop and stand here. In order to wear this glass eye again tomorrow, I've got to take it off right now. And this feels very reminiscent to me of how I think a lot of people relate to taking off the binder at night or whenever it is I wish I didn't have to take this off right now. I don't want it off. But if I'm going to wear it tomorrow, I've got to take it off right now. And so taking it off there, he's saying, isn't really taking it off. It's actually like part of the process of keeping it on. But keeping it on requires taking it off sometimes. And he says that attitude toward taking something off isn't hakpada. Hakpada is when there's a particular moment when you say, I would rather not have this on right now. I'm going to take it off. That is actually what I want. Rather than taking it off is actually just part of the long-term process of what it means to always keep this on.
I wear an insulin pump. Diabetes. Mm-hmm. I know there are a lot of halakhas around that, but I'm wondering about two things in particular. One is that my relationship to it in my life has mm-hmm. changed significantly. So there are times when I really, really don't want this on, mm-hmm. and times when I'm like, this is my pancreas, I wear it outside my body. Mm-hmm. It's very much part of what I am. So I wonder how the halakhas adjust. Like, if you're immersing monthly, mm-hmm. then you have this very changeable relationship with this external thing.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think there you might get into the question is really like, how do diabetics feel about this? Which maybe is like not a possible question to answer. Maybe there's a billion answers, which for trans people also is like, how do trans people feel about their binders? There's a lot of different answers. So I think there maybe is actually where the purpose of looking into sort of a general attitude is helpful, because it helps you not have a sort of like radically fluctuating practice month to month as your personal feelings are shifting and changing, which is inevitable probably for anything that people are regularly putting on their bodies, especially for like emotionally charged things people are putting on their bodies. So I think that actually might be where it's actually kind of helpful to say, like, we're not really trying to dig deep into your individual psyche. We're trying to understand, like, is this a way that people in this group often feel? And if it is, then maybe you have some license to be lenient there. Yeah, Alexi, and then whatever. I'll leave that.
I'm curious how far the base of mirrors concepts of like the surface, like what's the surface of your body goes.
Right.
I mean, like, I don't talk, mm-hmm. but it is my sense of the surface of my body that, like, that is what, you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, could I, even though I never talk, mm-hmm. could I go to the mikvah talk?
Yeah.
And is that, like, related to, like, well, trans women would do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a good question of, like, how far. and like what could it apply to cases where it's actually like not something you experience regularly, but maybe people in your group would. Or I think there are, I will say, there are people who say like, even if most people in this group are not MOCPED, but you are, that it's like, we're not going to let you individually go into the mikvah with something that you are MOCPED on, right? That's sort of a step too far of in the generalizing, right? So it might be like, we sort of go with whoever, like, if your group is MOCPED, then that's a problem, and if you're MOCPED, then that's a problem, and only if, like, neither of you are is that sort of where the leniency is. So, but that would be an interesting question to play out, is, like, how far that goes, I think, is good. Elisha, and then I'll go to John.
This is kind of a larger question, but assuming we are talking about, like, a monthly obligation to immerse in the mikvah, mm-hmm. have you thought about the dysphoria that in and of itself would create?
Of the immersion itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I guess I'm not familiar, but why does a trans man want to go to the mikvah?
There could be lots of reasons. So one could be that he is someone who still menstruates and is observing some of the laws around menstruation. Could be that he wants to convert to Judaism. There's lots of other reasons people go to the mikvah. Those are the two where the halachot sort of most matter, right? A lot of the other immersions are voluntary things that are where these would be less significant one way or the other. Those are two of the many cases where this could come up. Sorry, Elisha, will you finish your question?
Oh, so, yeah, just like what that would, kind of the larger picture of what that means for
yeah.
trans men and trans men.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good question that I didn't sort of fully get into in this. I think it sort of took for granted, like, you're going to the mikvah, now what? Right? And I think the prior question of, like, how do you feel about the fact you're going to the mikvah in the first place is, like, I think an important question and I think a distinct one from this. Yeah. John, yeah.
Yeah, so I know you want to go, but I'm just curious, in terms of the nail polish, the Karen, the Dubby's reasoning with the nail polish,
mm-hmm.
and the nail polish actually... I think you made a really good case that had. So really, it's one of the most more on point examples. I'm curious, like, and especially considering the Ashkenazi default about mikvah, is there some sort of consensus about nail polish? Is every post like a little different? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity around nail polish. I think a lot of poskim will distinguish between gel nail polish and regular nail polish, which people who wear nail polish tell me gel nail polish stays on a lot longer and is a lot harder to
sure.
take off and replace. People also will say things like, if your nail polish is chipped and damaged, then it's a chetzitza, because people are mockpied on
right.
messed up nails. Whereas if it's perfect and nice, then people aren't mockpied on taking that off. So there's a lot of different, but there's a lot of diversity on people who are like,
right.
as long as it's nice, totally fine, don't worry about it. Or like, you always have to take it off no matter what. All over the map on that.
Yeah, just in thinking that
yeah.
you start looking. Literature. I can imagine other posting looking at yours and reading in that logic, but then thinking about how they feel about that logic in general for nail polish.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like all of these precedents are also not like universally accepted,
right.
non-contested precedents. You won't find any of those anywhere.
Yeah.
But right, all of these are sort of up for disagreement. And in the full tshuva, I brought a lot of the disagreement on these precedents and engaged with some of that material.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's there for sure. Yeah.
So in the beginning, you talk about wanting to stay away from the sources that are more like medicalizing,
mm-hmm.
or like making it like video. But then two of the last three are sort of adjacent to that in the sense of disability. Like,
mm-hmm.
Ideally, her tooth would not have fallen out, or like most people hope that they won't need to use a glass eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this probably relates to a lot of contemporary disability theory, but I'm just wondering, like,
yeah.
I guess why you feel more comfortable or okay with putting it with like the tooth fell out, that's not awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You need some sort of functional additional thing
yeah.
to make yourself feel right with that, but you feel okay with that category.
Yeah, so I think the difference to me comes in is the argument coming from like danger. Like, would this be like risky and dangerous for you to take off versus like, right, I think it's like maybe we wish this person hadn't lost her eye, but like that's how she is. That's how her body works. And I think similarly, like, dysphoria is not a fun experience. Maybe I wish I wasn't feeling it, but that's who I am. That's how my body works. That's not something that I want to think about as bedyevid. And I think a lot of people who have sort of disabilities in this category would often think about it. Like, I don't want to think about, like, how my body is as, like, a bedyevid thing. That's just how it is. Where I think of what I'm trying to avoid is arguments that are saying, like, this would be dangerous or risky or harmful to you if you took it off, more so than equating it to other sort of like maybe unpleasant, but just like how the world is and how you are, facts about how people's bodies are.
I think one thing that the rabbis are running into and that we're also running into is trying to come up with a framework that is not about making people feel like a heter or a unique exception, but rather making them feel like they're part of a general group, but then also this deeply personal practice where you have to be alone with your body completely by yourself. And I think a lot of the questions and a lot of the tensions about like transness and also just like being human and living in a body and having to be alone with that body, like the rabbis are struggling with how to create a framework that is at once like generalizable and like legalistic and also accounts for the human. And so I'm just kind of lost.
Yeah, I think this is part of why I find this such like a rich topic, and also why it's such a complicated topic. Is on the one hand, it's where we sort of dig in most deeply towards like, how do people experience their bodies in kind of a like subjective way with like all of the diversity and how people experience their bodies, and trying to sort of legislate all of that while also taking into account all that subjectivity of how they experience it. And that inevitably is just going to be a really messy process. But I think it's also why some of this language to me felt so rich for thinking about trying to find language for trans experience in the sources. Yeah.
I wish you might build on that, because I too was muddling through some thoughts in terms of the cases that you have here, whether it's the hair ribbons or the eye, or the tube, or the nail polish. The differentiation between your experience of your body, which again, the mikveh has such a beautiful presence of really letting you be alone with your body, right? And your the fundamental underpinning of your question, right? And these other cases, perhaps, I'm just going to put it out there, have to do more with the public's viewing of your body, and even specifically the male gaze on the female body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how to put that together yet. So I'm just...
Yeah, I think that's for sure a really good question about, like, what is sort of about public presentation and what's about just internal sensation. I do think it's interesting that a lot of the sources are at least grounding their logic in someone's internal experience of their own body rather than explicitly in how their body is experienced by others. But it's definitely possible that that is sort of in the background there and how we're talking about this. We need to wrap up now, so I just want to say a couple just brief closing thoughts, which is what I hope that this does is sort of, that again, going back to that process of mutual illumination between the world and the Torah I talked about in the beginning, which is I hope that through this question, we now have a much more nuanced understanding of the Torah around chitzitza and how Torah in general engages with subjective human experiences of our bodies. And I hope that this question has actually really illuminated a lot of the complexity and richness there. And I hope that some of the language that we uncovered in the sources has helped us have a better and deeper understanding of what it feels like to be a person in a trans body. And I know for me that like going into these sources has really helped me feel like there's a lot of language for how it feels to be me. And so I hope that that is sort of an example of what having that goal of mutual illumination between the world and Torah can bring when we approach our halakhic questions in this way. Thank you.